This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
This is the voice of the Cincinnati Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired, WRRS in Cincinnati, Ohio. Good evening. Welcome to the USA Today Hour 2. This is Stephen Horde and
Jody Horde.
And we'll be reading the opinion page and the money section for Wednesday, April the 17th. The first opinion is by Ingrid Jocks and is entitled, President Wants Even More of My Tax Dollars. She writes, My husband and I both work full time. We like our jobs, but we work hard. Our reward, sending thousands of dollars to the federal government each year. Much like millions of other Americans on tax day, we had to write a large check and send it off to the Internal Revenue Service. It's always painful to kiss that money goodbye. It's even more difficult when I know just how poorly it will be spent. Case in point, President Joe Biden continues to doggedly pursue student loan forgiveness ahead of the November election. Perhaps Biden misread his job description. Instead of commander-in-chief, he's trying to act like the panderer-in-chief. Essentially, he's using our tax dollars as campaign funds. It seems not a week goes by when Biden isn't announcing some plan that will magically wipe out swaths of student loans. That's intentional, as Biden struggles with keeping young voters interested in his candidacy. The president's betting that erasing all this debt will buy him more votes come November. That became more urgent after the U.S. Supreme Court last summer overturned his initial unilateral attempt to cancel more than $400 billion in debt. Rather than learn anything from his setback, Biden immediately set off to find other ways he could force taxpayers to cover the cost of paying off other people's student loans. Never mind that the president's new efforts are almost surely just as unconstitutional as his first try. As a taxpayer and someone who has paid off my college loans, I find Biden's costly new entitlement program to be irksome. After all, the debt doesn't simply go away. It is loaded onto taxpayers' backs and added to our $34 trillion and counting national debt. Last week, Biden waved his magic wand again, announcing his latest round of lucky borrowers. More than 270,000 people in Biden's revamped income-driven repayment plans will see $7.4 billion in debt canceled, transferring $153 billion of student loan to taxpayers. That brings Biden's total debt transference from student borrowers to the taxpayers at large to $153 billion. About 4.3 million borrowers have benefited from Biden's generosity with taxpayers' money, and Biden has plans to expand who's eligible in the coming months through a different program. In addition to adding to the national debt and our tax burden as a country, Biden's actions are inflationary. Out-of-control government spending is one reason why inflation has remained so entrenched during his administration. My guess is most people who get their student debt zeroed out by Biden will go on some sort of spending spree. Progressive superstar Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez recently admitted as much while on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. The U.S. representative from New York said Biden's latest student cancellation proposal means hope to buy a house or have a kid or travel abroad or maybe even go back to school. That tracks with a 2022 poll found after Biden's initial debt plan rolled out. According to Intelligent.com, 73% of the anticipated recipients said they plan to spend the forgiven amount on non-essential things like travel, eating out, and new gadgets. These are all things most Americans want, but why should taxpayers who didn't go to college or who have paid off their debts subsidize the spending decisions of strangers? Unilateral and hence unconstitutional cancellation. Let's not forget the most egregious part of Biden's tax dollar giveaway. He loves to tout how this election is all about democracy and continuing with such sweeping executive vision. However, the president's proving that he is a threat to our system of checks and balances. Biden has failed to go through Congress, which should sign off on such a costly expenditure, and he's ignored a pointed rebuke from the Supreme Court. The Biden administration is once again looking to have a huge unilateral and hence unconstitutional student debt cancellation. Neil McCluskey, education policy expert at the Cato Institute, observed on X. I don't appreciate my hard-earned dollars being used by Biden to buy favor among voters, and I resent that he's doing it in such a blatantly undemocratic manner. By Ingrid Jacques, a columnist for USA Today. Jody?
Thank you, Steve. This is also looking at student debt by Sarah Pequelno, and that it's titled Stop Hating on Biden for Student Debt Relief Plans. Last week, President Joe Biden's administration unveiled yet another student debt relief plan. It was the latest among announcement from a presidency that will be remembered for student loan debt forgiveness, regardless of your place on the political spectrum. By this fall, more than 30 million people might benefit from the new proposals, which are supposed to fulfill one of Biden's 2020 campaign promises, just in time for the general election. This is in addition to the estimated 4 million people who have already had their loans forgiven through past executive actions from Biden. The new program will be as close as the president can get to his initial plan with the conservative hurdles he has to clear, including the Supreme Court's ruling against him. It addresses multiple types of borrowers, those who have had loans for more than 20 years, borrowers who have interest on their loans and make less than $120,000 a year, plus borrowers experiencing financial hardships. Student loan debt has doubled over the past two decades. It's good, great, even, that Biden is forgiving the debt. Today's college graduates are saddled with more debt immediately out of college than our predecessors. Gone are the days of paying off your loans with summer jobs or those first few post-grad paychecks. It shows that his administration is aware how different the system is compared with decades prior. About 43 million people have federal student loan debt equating to more than $1.6 trillion, including private loans, and it's an additional $13 billion. This is something that affects people's lives day in and day out, and it has become increasingly common with each new generation. Pew Research Center found that those born after 1996 is on track to be the most well-educated generation. A Gallup poll last year found that 83% of Generation Z thinks college is very important to, or fairly important. Biden knows this, and it could pay off for him in November. Right now, the president is being criticized heavily by Gen Z for his stance on Gaza, and he needs to appeal to younger voters who may be wary of heading to the polls. Student loan debt relief is a surefire way to win over progressive voters, even if part of the program is aimed at people 20 years their senior. The plan also should win Biden points with Generation X and millennials, who owe more debt on average. Criticism of this plan, the idea that Biden is buying votes, fails to address the new cost of college and the potential for improving the economy. It's understandable that older generations feel frustrated by the debt relief Biden is promising and providing. It also is true that student loan debt has doubled over the past two decades because of the increase in students pursuing degrees after high school. There also is a racial disparity in student loan debt. Black and Latino voters are more likely to have to take on debt and have higher levels of debt on average. Canceling student loan debt helps mitigate the factors that keep people economically behind their peers. Borrowers still are feeling the effects of the pandemic as well. About 40% of federal student loan borrowers missed their first payment post-COVID repayment freeze. Critics ignore that debt relief helps the economy overall. When older generations complain about younger people being entitled, they should remember that debt relief helps the economy overall because it helps people save money for milestone purchases, like buying a car or a house. By following up on a campaign promise that would benefit millions, Biden is reminding voters of why they voted for him in the first place. Many people were unenthused about voting for him in 2020. He had neither the grassroots support of Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont nor the newcomer's advantage of Pete Buttigieg. The progressive agenda that Biden's White House touted was a sign that he knew younger voters weren't going to accept vote blue no matter who, and he exemplified that on day one by extending the pause on repaying student loans. Even though the first attempt to forgive millions of borrowers eventually was overruled, the administration has continued to push forward and forgive loans for borrowers who meet specific criteria. Biden already had forgiven $138 billion of student loan debt before last week's news. The new initiative is a sign that Biden understands what will get people to the polls. If his team is smart, they'll keep Biden's student loan relief as a tenet of his 2024 campaign. This is written again by Sarah Pequeno. She's on X, formerly Twitter, at Sarah_PEQUENO. Over to you, Steve.
Thank you, Jody. You've been listening to the Opinion Page for Wednesday, April the 17th. We're moving now to the Money Page for Wednesday, April 17th, and noting first the short articles in the left-hand column that are called the Money Line. Starbucks customers can grab one of three new spicy lemonade refreshers built off the current spicy trend. Spicy is a combination of the words sweet and spicy. The new refreshers and cold foam flavor will only be available this spring, according to Starbucks. Spicy dragon fruit combines the flavors of mango and exotic dragon fruit shaken with ice. Dragon fruit pieces, zesty lemonade, and Starbucks spicy chili powder blend. Whew. Spicy pineapple features flavors of pineapple and passion fruit, pineapple pieces, lemonade, and spicy chili powder blend. Spicy strawberry brings together flavors of strawberry and acai, strawberry pieces, lemonade, and spicy chili powder blend. Spicy cream cold foam will be added to any beverage. Disney's disability service to enforce ban for lying. Walt Disney World and Disneyland recently updated their policy for guests with disabilities, and those who lie and misuse the program will be banned for life. The two resorts announced changes to their disability access stations last week to keep up with the rapidly growing number of requests. DAS helps those with disabilities and their families have an enjoyable experience at the park. Disney doesn't require any proof of disability or access needs. Yet if any statements a guest made during the DAS enrollment process are found to be false, the guest will be permanently barred from entering Walt Disney World and Disneyland. More than two dozen Silver Sea Cruises passengers got sick in a gastrointestinal illness outbreak. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said 28 of Silver Nova's 633 guests reported being ill during a voyage that began on March the 31st, along with one of the vessel's crew. Silver Sea notified guests and crew of the outbreak and urged them to report cases and practice good hands hygiene, the CDC said. The line isolated those who were sick and implemented heightened cleaning and disinfection. Tesla to lay off 10% of their global workforce. To prepare for Tesla's next phase, the tech giant has decided to lay off 10% of its global workforce, according to multiple reports that cite a memo sent to employees by CEO Elon Musk. Over the years, we have grown rapidly with multiple factories scaling around the globe, Musk said in the memo obtained by Electric and CNBC. With this rapid growth, there has been duplications of roles and job functions in certain areas, the memo said. There is nothing I hate more, but it must be done, Musk said. Jody?
Thank you, Steve. The next article is titled, Social Media Has Kids on Edge. Can We Fix Damage? And the subtitle says, Author Says It's Not Too Late to Repair Problem, by Jennifer Jolly. The screen time battles are already in full swing with my niece. She turned 2 years old in January. I want iPad! She wails across the house during lunchtime. She refuses to eat, even though I can tell she's hangry. She even more inconsolable when I tell her she can watch 10 minutes of Chameleon only after she takes at least 3 bites of her lunch. If it were up to me, I would throw her iPad away. I'm not kidding. I can't stand to watch her. One of the most intelligent and empathic toddlers I've ever been around gets completely sucked in and tuned out on screens. She taps and swipes and stares, totally hypnotized by its magnetic pull. Screens are already her go-to method of comfort. Her favorite reward, even better than candy, and all too often, the on-demand babysitter for her parents who are overwhelmed and just trying to make it through the day. There's a lot to unpack here, and I have no idea how to help. To be fair, I whip out a phone, and it lasts as anyone else when we're all out to dinner together and the crayons and puzzles stop working. We all just need a few bites of our food and 5 minutes of adult conversation, right? What's worse, I often feel powerless against the pull of my screens, too. I have zero doubt that smartphones have rewired our brains in negative ways, not because so many new studies suggest it, but because of how I feel and what I see happening in the world around me. The always-on gadgets that were supposed to make my life easier, more fun, and more productive now often disrupt my sleep, ruin my semblance of work-life balance, and wipe out my self-esteem. I get lost in rabbit holes nearly every time I pick up my smartphone, and I routinely feel incapacitated when it comes to doing anything about it. As bad as I feel about my own smartphone and screens, I feel worse for our kids. I've witnessed them suffer the most from our device addictions and their own. Give them a smartphone or an all-access pass to social media too soon and risk alarming rates of depression, anxiety, self-harm, and suicide. But if you're the one strict parent who denies access, are you stunting their growth in an ever-evolving digital world and potentially socially distancing or ostracizing them too? The anxious generations have smartphones rewired childhood. Everyone I know is talking about the new book, The Anxious Generation. how the great rewiring of childhood is causing an epidemic of mental illness. In it, social psychologist and author and New York University professor Jonathan Holt stacks mountains of evidence indicating a correlation between the rise of smartphones and sharp declines in the well-being of our kids. Holt argues that the transition from a play-based to a phone-based youth has rewired childhood. He also says that it has disrupted social and neurological development and caused social anxiety, sleep deprivation, attention fragmentation, and addiction. The problems ramped up around the year 2012.
Now let's move on to a subject matter, Major League
Baseball. Holt says he cites hundreds of scientific studies and other high-quality data to paint smartphones, tablets, and social media as unstoppable forces, pushing Generation Z, people born after 1996, out of reality and into a digital world where rules aren't always clear. People hide behind anonymous social media accounts and rumors spread faster than wildfire. Smartphones and social media aren't the only culprits, though. Sure, they opened a can of worms by providing unrestricted access to carefully orchestrated algorithms trained to lure kids in and keep them coming back for more. But Holt says it was those factors combined with the rise of fearful and overprotective parenting that started in the 1980s and continues to present to the present day that create a perfect storm for a diminishing ability to raise healthy humans. We rewired childhood and created an epidemic of mental illness, Holt said in several recent interviews. After more than a decade of stability or improvement, the mental health of adolescents plunged in the early 2010s. We have overprotected our children in the real world and underprotected them online. Critics argue Holt and his colleagues have all mistaken correlation for causation, among other complaints. But it looks like some of the sharpest critics have actually read the book. The author is next level, transparent, and shares the data and sources openly online. Is this just the latest parent panic? I'll admit it's not an easy read as a parent. The most frustrating part for me, at least, is that I've known in my gut that this was happening for over a decade. Most parents probably feel the same way, and despite doing our very best, we often fall back on the old, well, the train's already left the station, or before this, there was too much TV, before that, too much risque rock music, and this is just the latest thing to freak out about. Excuses. But it's pretty apparent that we've collectively relied too much on technology to pacify our kids. If life was a horror movie, this is where we'd realize the call was coming from inside the house all along. Tech companies, of course, are all too happy to oblige. Most draw up extensive terms of use that prohibit kids of certain ages from using their services. But there's virtually no enforcement of those guidelines. Ask anyone under the age of 13 how they manage to work around social media age restrictions, and they'll say, I lied about my age. Kids also love games and communicating with their friends online, and knowing when those habits cross over into problematic territory is proving to be more complicated than many parents imagined. Social media and video games are among the worst offenders. They hooked children during vulnerable developmental stages while their brains were rapidly rewiring in response to incoming stimulation, Holt says. by designing a fire hose of addictive content that entered through kids' eyes and ears, and by displacing physical play and in-person socializing, these companies have rewired childhood and changed human development on an almost unimaginable scale. The damage, he says, is clear. An epidemic of pain and suffering among young people around the world that's produced a generation of failure to launch boys and fragile, depressed girls. Can we raise healthy humans alongside modern tech? This is a question I've asked myself and hundreds of others in the past decade, both while covering consumer tech and raising a now 23-year-old daughter. Here's what I know for sure. Extremes don't work. Zero tech households are a lot like no sugar families. Kids sneak, hide, and lie about the inevitable screen time they manage to finagle from friends, other families, and even school. They are often worse than their peers at self-regulation. On the other end of the spectrum, giving a child their own smartphone before double digits creates a sort of zombie apocalypse. Two, I'm thinking of one friend with a now 10-year-old daughter who spends 9 or more hours a day on TikTok, Snapchat, and YouTube. She told me recently she would die without her phone. Anecdotally, extremely controlled screen time seems to have the best outcomes. But that's really hard and time-consuming for most parents to manage. The problem is overwhelming. The peer pressure from other kids and even other parents is extreme. Many teens and young adults I talk to wish there were clear requirements and boundaries similar to driving license and drinking ages. One recent study even noted that a majority of college students say they wish TikTok and Instagram were never invented. My daughter has told me the same thing. The biggest opponent we are facing is not that parents or even teens disagree with us. It is that so many feel hopeless. Holt's lead researcher, Zach Roche, wrote in an email, "Our goal is to show that there really is a lot we can do, especially if we act together." The book recommends 4 new norms to turn back the phone-based childhood. No smartphones before high school. No social media until 16. Schools should ban phones during the entire school day. Just put them into a phone locker or yonder pouch. Finally, we need to give our kids more independence, freedom, and responsibility to play or hang out with each other on their own in the real world, just as most of us did when we were their age. Not all screen time is bad. Roche is quick to point out that not all screen time is bad. He and Holt recommended families watch an age-appropriate movie together or play a game in real time with a friend or family member for a healthier dose of tech. The problems, they say, come with sites like YouTube and other products designed to maximize the amount of time they spend on the platforms, such as TikTok. And it's the asynchronous activities such as posting and scrolling on social media that sucks kids in and keeps them from real-world interactions that are crucial for their social development. Holt recommends flip phones before high school. I've been preaching this for the past several years, too. I use a $20 Smart Talk wireless Nokia 2760 flip phone on nights and weekends to help with my smartphone addiction, and have recently given a handful to my friends with middle school age kids. Haven't we heard all of this before? I heard and offered most of these suggestions before and not seen any real change. What's different now? Will we actually roll back the damage and create a healthier future for our children with tech? Can we get tech titans who won't let their kids use the same devices and apps they created to put age limits and more real-life guardrails around their inventions? We have to try. Halt set a deadline and says society can end the phone-based childhood by the end of 2025. That's a lofty goal, but he says we're at a tipping point, and he's sure this can and will work. We find that we don't need to convince many people about the nature of the problem. Most people see it, Halt wrote on his Substack. Our main opponents are despair and resignation. The four norms offer a way out of the trap. Steve, over to you.
Thank you, Jody. This article is under the topic Universal Orlando, and it's titled 10 Tips to Get Most Out of Adventure by Eve Chen of USA Today. I'll never forget walking out of Universal Islands of Adventure in 2022, drenched from head to toe after riding Popeye and Bluto's Bilge Rat Barge. It was my first trip back to Universal Orlando Resort in years, and I learned some things the hard way, which I gladly shared with fellow travelers, hoping they'd avoid my mistakes. Since then, I've had the opportunity to visit the Florida resort several times a year. And while I stand by my earlier tips, I learned a few others. First of all, stay on the property. That's number one. Here, from RV parks to vacation rentals, there's no shortages of place to stay in Central Florida. But it can pay to stay on property when visiting Universal Orlando. Not only are the prices comparable to off-property hotels with endless summer surfside and dockside starting at $99 a night, but all of Universal's resort hotels offer 30 minutes of early entry to select parks, which vary depending on the time of year. They also provide free resort transportation so you can get back to your room fairly quickly after a long park day or a midday break. That free transportation can be clutch in the mornings, particularly at pricier Lowe's Sapphire Falls, Lowe's Royal Pacific, Lowe's Portofino Bay, and Hard Rock Hotel, which offer water taxis that drop you off closer to the parks than you can get arriving by car or bus. Cabana Bay Beach Resort and Adventura Hotel guests can walk over to Sapphire Falls for water taxis. But the extra time and steps added may make it not worth skipping the resort shuttle bus. Walking paths are also available to the parks from every resort hotel except the endless summer ones. Cabana Bay guests also have a dedicated walking path to Universal's Volcano Bay Water Park. Guests staying at the Royal Pacific, Portofino Bay, and Hard Rock also get free Universal Express passes, while dramatically cut waits for most rides and normally start at $79.99 a person. Free package delivery is also available to all resort hotels. If guests want to lug park purchases around all day, guests must store loose articles in free lockers before getting in line for Harry Potter and the Escape from Gringotts. Number two, buy a popcorn bucket. You like that one, honey?
I do.
Snacking at the parks can get expensive. Guests are welcome to bring their own snacks, but there's one crowd pleaser that won't break the bank. A plain popcorn bucket costs a little over $12, and you keep getting refills throughout your trip. Refills cost around $2 each, making popcorn among the cheapest, most shareable snacks on the property. On our last trip, my family and I got multiple refills for the price of one pretzel with a cheese dip. Number three, bring a light, refillable water bottle. Staying hydrated is always important, particularly on hot park days. You can fill water bottles with free ice-cold water at any of the many Coca-Cola Freestyle machines across the property. Cups of ice water are also available for free anytime dispensed soft drinks are sold. Leave big double-walled stainless steel tumblers at home. Not only will they feel heavy carrying them around all day, but if they aren't leak-proof, they'll make a mess when you tip on them on their sides to fit lockers or thrill rides. Number 4, bring a medium-sized bag to carry your stuff. Numerous attractions, from Jurassic World VelociCoaster to Man in Black Alien Attack, require guests to store loose articles in lockers provided for the duration of the ride. I previously recommended keeping most of your things together to avoid having to empty every pocket each time. That's still true, but I want to add a caveat on size. The free lockers aren't very big. They can fit a Loungefly-style mini backpack or empty popcorn bucket if you squish them down, but they're not large enough for packed full-size backpacks. Keep that in mind unless you want to pay for larger lockers. Number 5, bring ponchos. Ponchos don't take a lot of space and can save you from getting soaked like me on Popeye and Bluto's Bilge Rat Barge, Dudley Do-Right's Rip Saw Falls, and Jurassic Park's River Adventure. Even if you skip water rides, ponchos are good to keep on hand for rainy park days. Number 6, use single rider lines. Many attractions have a single rider line. If you're traveling alone or don't mind your party being split up, you can save time using the single rider lane if it's open. They're not always offered. It doesn't guarantee a short wait, but it's usually shorter. On our latest trip, my middle schooler waited at least 45 minutes for the Incredible Hulk coaster and an hour for Hollywood Rip Ride Rocket. That was about as long as the regular standby wait for Hulk, but shorter than the standby wait for Rip Ride Rocket. The following attractions have single rider lanes, though availability varies. At the Universal Studios Florida, they include E.T. Adventure, Harry Potter and the Escape from the Gringotts, Hollywood Rip Ride Rocket, Men in Black Alien Attack, Revenge of the Mummy, The Simpsons Ride, Transformers, The Ride 3D Universal Islands of Adventure, Dr. Doom's Fearfall, Dudley Do-Right's Rip Saw Falls, Hagrid's Magical Creatures Motorbike Adventure, Harry Potter and the Forbidden Journey, Jurassic Park River Adventure, Jurassic World VelociCoaster, The Amazing Adventures of Spider-Man, The Incredible Hulk Coaster. Number 7. Use Child Swap. If someone in your party doesn't meet ride requirements for an attraction or simply wants to sit it out, you can ask for a child swap. It's particularly helpful for families with young children because it allows parents and caregivers to take turns riding the ride and staying with whatever is sitting out, staying with whoever is sitting out. On our most recent trip, my youngest didn't want to ride Hagrid's Magical Creatures Motorbike Adventure. So we all waited in line together, but when she and I peeled off to a designated waiting room, well, my middle schooler and mother-in-law went on the ride. When they were done, my mother-in-law stayed with my youngest when I went on the ride. My middle schooler lucked out, getting to ride it twice. Woo! Not all attractions have waiting rooms, but they all offer swaps. Just let team members know you need one. Number 8, take breaks. Theme parks can be exhausting. Not only are you on your feet all day, but they can be loud, crowded, and overstimulating. When possible, I like to plan for at least one sit-down meal in the day. This way I can take my time and recuperate in air condition away from crowds. I typically splurge on one table service meal, but there are several medium-priced, quick-service restaurants across both theme parks where you can grab a lighter snack and relax. Really, any cool spot where you can sit down works. Nocturne Alley in the Wizard World of Harry Potter, Diagon Alley at Universal Studios Florida is always refreshing, though dark. Jurassic Park Discovery Center and Islands of Adventure is a great place for kids to explore while adults unwind. Rise get a lot of the love, but Universal Studios live entertainment is top tier. You can find showtimes on the free resort app or simply stop to watch performances you stumble across while roaming the park. The only year-round shows with dedicated seating are Universal Studios Florida's Animal Actors on Location, the Bourne Stuntacular, and Universal Orlando's Horror Makeup Show, which is more funny than scary. Number 10, let little ones stretch their legs. There are several play areas across both theme parks for little ones to burn off energy. This summer, a new DreamWorks Land will open at Universal Studios Florida with a Kung Fu Panda-themed play area. At Islands of Adventure, kids can explore Camp Jurassic in Jurassic Park, If I Ran a Zoo in Seuss Landing, and Me Ship, the Olive in Toon Lagoon. There are also splash pads and water features across Toon Lagoon. Bonus, don't sleep on Volcano Bay. You definitely want to pack swimsuit if you're heading to Volcano Bay, which regularly ranks among the best water parks in the country and adds a completely different experience to vacation. It's themed like a tropical paradise with plenty of trees and an iconic volcano that houses multiple water slides. The water park can get crowded, but you never spend too much time standing in line because every guest gets a Tapu Tapu wearable bracelet that lets them join one virtual quay at a time. Single-day tickets start at $80, which is considerably less than the $110 starting price for guests age 10 and up at Universal Studios Florida or Islands of Adventure, but still not cheap. However, if you're already planning to buy multi-day tickets for both parks, tacking on Volcano Bay is not much more. Number 9 is watch the shows with no comment. Watch the shows. Jody?
Thank you. Going on to some other smaller articles. This one's titled Dangerous Oahu Hike Will Be Removed Permanently. Starting this month, one of Hawaii's most dangerous and controversial hikes will be permanently removed. Oahu's Stairway to Heaven Trail, comprising 3,922 slick steel steps that ascend the narrow ridges of the Kula Mountain Range, has been illegal to hike since 1987. Although trespassing cost hikers a $1,000 citation, thousands still attempt the trek for a idyllic view of the island. Social media helped propel the trail, also known as Haiku Stairs, into popularity. The process of dismantling the aging, narrow metal stair structure will begin with the removal of more than 600 stair modules, according to a news release by the city and county of Honolulu. The entire project is expected to take 6 months. During last Wednesday's announcement, Honolulu Mayor Rick Blengeldred said the removal is long overdue. This decision that was made was predicated upon our respect for the people who live in and around the entrance to the stairs, our respect for our Ulna land, and our respect for both the future and the past history of the culture of the Haiku community, he added. The city and county of Honolulu unanimously passed Resolution 21-154 in 2021 to remove the stairs as an effort to increase the quality of life for nearby residents, improve public safety, and preserve the natural beauty of the lush Haiku Valley. Honolulu City Council Vice Chair Esther Kaelana, who introduced the resolution, called the project a new chapter for Haiku Valley, and the collective decision to eradicate the stairs is for the good of the community, during the news conference, according to Hawaii New Now. After decades of the community asking the government for relief, we had an obligation to make a decision, and a decision that I knew would displeased some people, but at the end, I had to look at a lot of variable factors. Kalanai, who has been involved in discussions around land management for Hayuku Steers for over two decades, told USA Today. She called it a hard decision. For decades, residents who live near the stairs have been complaining of disturbances by hikers who often hop fences and trespassed onto private property during the middle of the night to catch the sunrise. Some hikers blocked people's driveways and vandalized or urinated on people's property, the resolution said. Between August 2017 and March 2020, police officers turned away 11,427 people attempting to hike the stairs, but passing through the surrounding neighborhoods, the resolution said. With its steep cliffs and unpredictable weather conditions, the trail is highly dangerous. Any mistake can result in a helicopter rescue, although there have not been any fatalities on record. Between 2010 and 2022, more than 188 people were rescued from the hike, paid for by taxpayers, with helicopter rescues costing thousands of dollars. A bill was introduced last year to make people pay for their own rescues, but it has not passed. Along with deconstructing the stairs, the project also includes the restoration of native plants in impacted areas. The project also will preserve some of the structure to honor the stairs' historical significance as a World War II military access route. The city stressed that the stairs will become even more perilous during construction. Steve?
Thank you, Jody. Apparently, there's an organization called High Stay. And so the title of this article is High Stay Aims for the Gold Standard of Paris Lodging. Now, if you're headed for the Olympics, this is an article you want to listen to. It's by Kathleen Wong of USA Today. As the Paris 2024 Summer Olympics approach, thousands of travelers eager to be a part of the excitement are likely searching for the perfect accommodations. The Olympics will take place from July 26th to August 11th and are expected to attract about 300,000 people to the opening ceremony. Though folks can search for Airbnbs or hotels, there's a lodging option exclusively for the City of Lights that seeks to curate a high-end Parisian experience for its guests. High Stay is a new hybrid hospitality concept that blends the amenities of a five-star hotel with the privacy of a luxury residence. The independent collection of 1 to 3 bedroom apartments is located in some of Paris's iconic neighborhoods and puts travelers close to the Olympic action. High Stay was born on a trip with friends inspired by the desire to reinvent the classic hotel model. General Manager Maxime Lalament told USA Today in an email, "From there, the brand sought to break free from the norms of traditional hospitality and offer an innovative combination of upscale short-term travel apartments and luxury hotels." What sets the High Stay apart? High Stay seeks to give guests the best of both worlds, experiencing a five-star hotel and local luxurious flat all at once, Lalament said. Guests can opt for short-term stays, such as single night or up to a month. With floor-to-ceiling windows and marble places, each high-stay apartment has been highly curated by a team of expert architects and interior designers to exude the quintessential Parisian elegance that attracts travelers. Guests can quickly check in and out through digital key locks. A one-bedroom apartment in the Marais that can hold up for four guests starts at $538 or 500 euros a night. Like a hotel, each high-stay apartment comes with daily housekeeping, a guest experience manager, and personalized concierge to coordinate things such as car services, breakfast delivery, and restaurant reservations. The concierge even curates a snack and coffee collection to your liking. Guests can also request a unique city guide for their Parisian neighborhood that includes gallery openings, new restaurants, and more. There are also high-stay experiences that immerse travelers in the culture of Paris, such as a private cooking class or an exclusive visit to the engine room of the Eiffel Tower and a glass of champagne, all at the top. How many high-stay sites? 36 apartments are available for neighborhoods including Champs-Élysées, Saint-Honoré, the Louvre, and Marais. By the end of 2025, the company plans to expand to 100 locations, including villas. Where can travelers book? Travelers can browse available apartments and reserve online at HighStay's website. How far in advance should I book? Travelers can reserve their high-stay apartments just as they would with a hotel or Airbnb, whether it's one day in advance or months ahead. Why pick high-stay for Olympics? A majority of the high-stay apartments are close to the Olympic festivities, such as the Eiffel Tower Stadium and the landmark itself, and an outdoor stadium at Peru de Champs de Mars. You like my accent, honey? The concierge services can make enjoying the city during the games more seamless, Lalemant said. Those attending may choose to take advantage of high-stay's personalized concierge services, including add-ons ranging from luxury car services to and from the venue to daily breakfast, deliveries through festivities, deliveries before the festivities, child care services, or a personal training session to start the day. Jody?
Thank you, Steve. We're going to move to the 50 states news little blurbs. We have about 6 minutes left for this evening's show. And so I'm going to read the highlight, which is Michigan. It says artist Hubert Massey completed the mural on the wall surrounding two Stellantis plants on Detroit's east side. Detroit. Hubert Massey used to be a sign painter, working on billboards year-round when they were still hand-painted. Massey's time as a wall dog, working outdoors in less than ideal, sometimes sub-freezing weather, has continued to serve him well, as evidenced by a recently completed mural, the second of two installments on Detroit's east side. Massey, a Kresge Artist Fellow, brought in a team of about a half a dozen artists to help finish the project, which involved transferring drawings to the concrete surface and applying 45 gallons of paint. Although this giant piece of public art measures 1,500 feet long by 15 feet high. Steve?
Thank you. Alabama, Gadsden. Gadsden State Community Colleges, fledgling police department, and the Gadsden Police Department will now have each other's backs following the signing of a memorandum of understanding between the law enforcement agencies.
Alaska Anchorage. The University of Alaska Anchorage was recently selected by the Department of Homeland Security to house a new Arctic Security Research Facility, Alaska Public Media reported.
Arizona, Phoenix. The number of cranes throughout Phoenix has remained steady since last year, according to the most recent Ryder-Levitt-Bucknall Crane Index. The Ryder-Levitt-Bucknall's Crane Index for North America is a biannual report that tracks the number of operating tower cranes in 14 major cities across the U.S. and Canada.
Arkansas, Little Rock. The Arkansas General Assembly kicked off the 2024 fiscal session for the upcoming budget year with Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders calling for continued focus on education reform.
California, Death Valley. Death Valley, the hottest area of America, exploded with color and is experiencing a rare super bloom for the first time in 8 years. Apparently, 2024 had exactly what the Dry Valley needed to fill it with gold, purple, pink, or white flowers.
Colorado, Fort Collins, a private company, has been fined by the city of Fort Collins for failing to obtain the proper permit before work that disturbed a prairie colony in preparation of a city road construction project.
Connecticut, Norwich, the Bekarius, B-E-K-I-A-R-I-S brothers, are best known as the owners of Prime 82 Restaurant and Bar in Norwich, But their next restaurant draws on the legacy of another well-known local restaurant. Volare Mexican Fusion Restaurant is expected to open this summer.
Delaware, Wilmington, Delaware Technical College, Community College will no longer accept new students to degree programs focused on energy. These two-year degree programs in energy management, renewable energy, solar, and building automation systems will be discontinued by fall 2024, as Dean of Instruction John Buckley alerted to some of the college community via email last month.
District of Columbia, Washington. U.S. Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas was not on the bench on Monday as the other eight justices heard arguments with no reason given for his absence.
Florida, Titusville. Last week, conditions were perfect for a major spawning and crab counting event at Horseshoe Crabs came ashore at the Gator Creek Road Beach in Titusville. For the first time in 2 years, thousands of these prehistoric-looking creatures gathered at the beach.
Georgia, Augusta. From 2010 to 2020, the total number of opiate-related overdose deaths in Georgia increased by 207%, according to the Georgia Department of Public Health. But there is new funding to decrease that loss of lives. Jody, you might want to skip to Ohio. We're running close.
Hawaii, Honolulu. In a nod to its rich cultural heritage, Hawaii's state legislature appears poised to designate the iconic shaka creature as the island's official symbol, recognizing it as its birthplace.
Kentucky, Louisville. At least two dozen public schools in Jefferson County will have their start times changed again under the Transportation Plan Board and members approved. One more, Jody.
Okay, Ohio. Columbus, recreational marijuana sales in Ohio may begin sooner than expected. Industry and state officials say medical marijuana stores could open their doors for adult use customers this summer, potentially as early as June.
Indianapolis, Indiana. Indiana State Police expected thousands of visitors to view the total solar eclipse last week. The governor even had signed an emergency order, but the state didn't see nearly the number of tourists reported. Well, you've been listening to the second hour of USA Today, where we've done the opinions, we've done the money page, and a little extra state news. This is Stephen Hoard.
And Jody Hoard.
And this is the voice of the Cincinnati Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired.